Woody Guthrie's the quintessential folk singer, the poet of hard times, the rambling man who loved the open road. Steve Paulson got together with Woody's biographer, Elizabeth Partridge, and his daughter, Nora. Nora Guthrie says her father didn't exactly invent the political folk song, but he created a new kind of music.
There's always been a tradition of the troubadour, who was the guy who traveled around the countryside bringing the news to people who couldn't read or write. But the idea of a roving reporter-type journalist, when he sang the song of Pretty Boy Floyd, it's half journalistic, and then there's commentary. So you have the story of Pretty Boy Floyd, and then the final line of Pretty Boy Floyd is, it's through this world I rambled, I'd see lots of funny men, some rob you with a six-gun, and some with a fountain pen.
Some with a fountain pen. But as through your life you travel, and as through your life you roam, you won't never see an outlaw drive a family from their home.
Elizabeth, as you were digging into the songs, were there any particular surprises?
I think, first of all, just the vast number of songs he wrote, and then the way he could take a very complex situation and boil it down into a few stanzas. And he did, for example, he saw the movie The Grapes of Wrath and was asked to write a song for The Grapes of Wrath. Pete Seeger told me this story, actually. Woody ran into Pete and he said, "Hey, Pete, you got a typewriter?" And Pete said, "I've got a friend with one. Let's go over to his place." They went over there and Pete watched as Woody would play a few measures on his guitar, sit down, work at the typewriter for a minute, stand back up, play a few more things on his guitar, sit down. And about 10 o'clock, Pete fell asleep. And when he woke up in the morning, Woody had fallen asleep underneath the table and there was a 17-verse song.
Tom Joad got out of the old McAllister pen. There he got his parole. After 4 long years on a man-killing charge, Tom Joad come walking down the road, poor boy. Tom Joad come walking down the road.
Did Woody Guthrie have a philosophy about what makes a good song?
Simple. He liked to keep it really simple. He thought that people got too complicated when they did their folk songs. In fact, when he wrote This Land Is Your Land, the first time Pete Seeger heard it, he thought, that's too simple. Later, Pete said, that shows you how wrong you can be. So Woody stuck with a very simple lyric. And
I think one of his quotes was, if you play more than 3 chords, you're showing off. But the idea was, you have to understand that the reason he wrote songs, I mean, so much of it had to do with participation. It had to do with rallying, activating people into some kind of movement. I don't always mean political movement. Sometimes I just mean get them moving, get your butt up, you know, off the chair.
Didn't he also think that there should be something uplifting about a song?
You know, he said, I hate a song that makes you feel low down, that makes you feel you're no good. I'm out to sing the songs that'll make you feel like this is your world, no matter how hard it's rolled you over. He was a very positive guy and also a guy who suffered from a lot of demons, but he wanted to put out a lot of really good energy.
Well, it seems to me there's a paradox at the center of Woody Guthrie's life. As you say, he was an optimist. He wanted to see the best in people, but his own life, especially his childhood, was quite difficult. He grew up poor. His older sister died in a fire. His mother ended up in an insane asylum. His father was often not there. It's a pretty grim story.
Yep.
It's always the people that have the toughest time that have to reach down inside themselves and struggle to find the glory of life and to find what keeps you going when times are so hard, you know? The people that have it easy don't really think about life too much.
The hard and it's hard, ain't it hard to love one that never did love you? Hard and it's hard, ain't it hard, great God, to love one that never will be true?
Woody is just a pure artist in this sense, that he reached inside of himself to keep himself walking, to keep himself going, to keep himself breathing. He had to find his own inner light, you know, his own deepest inner joy when there was no joy around him. And not only that, but he had to use that joy to try to cheer up a whole bunch of other people who were standing around hungry and starving and homeless. And that's the uniqueness of his character, his soul. Not a lot of people could do that. I mean, he had every excuse in the world to just become an alcoholic and forget about it, you know? Just end up on the Bowery, call it a day. And, you know, some people do, but for some strange reason, he was able to tap into this incredible hope.
Elizabeth, as I was reading your biography, I had the sense, the very strong sense, that Woody was restless, that he just couldn't stay still for very long, and he had to get out on the road. And in fact, didn't he say that he often wrote his best songs when he was walking down a road?
He was definitely a rambler. I mean, when things were really bad, Woody would hit the road. When things got too good, Woody would hit the road. I mean, he quite honestly made a number of really stupid decisions in his life, and it was one of the things that was very hard for me as his biographer. I kind of had the overview of his life, and I'd be sitting in my little room, and then I'd read some more stuff, and I'd be like, oh, no. I'd come bolting out of my writing room, and I'd say to my husband, you wouldn't believe what he just did.
Give me one or two examples of stupid things he did.
Okay, sometimes he did stupid, painful things, like he had a beloved daughter named Kathy Ann, and when she was 4, she was burnt to death in a fire, and it was almost unbearable for Woody and Marjorie. This was Nora's oldest sister, and Marjorie was pregnant at the time with her next child, who would be Arlo. Woody was so distraught, he took off. He hit the road. He left New York and went all the way to the West Coast and wrote these miserable letters back to Marjorie about how unhappy he was on the road. But it was the only way he could find solace was to be moving. So I just thought that was a pretty bad decision, given that his wife was at home without Kathy Ann and without him.
So long, it's been good to know you. So long, been good to know you. So long, it's been good to know you. This dusty old dust is a-blowing me home. I've got to be rolling along.
He basically just didn't want to be pinned down. He wanted to have the freedom to turn around, which is why he never really joined, like, the Communist Party. There's a lot of discussion about, was he a communist? He couldn't have joined any party. He couldn't belong to any organization. He couldn't be married to one woman in the traditional sense. He was not a father in any kind of normal sense of the word. He had to do just the opposite of what was expected. That was part of his mischievousness and part of his humor and charm, too. And really irritating to a lot of people, I might add.
Well, I can imagine, especially for family members. Now, when you say he wasn't a father in the normal sense, did you ever really know him? I know you were pretty young when he died, but how close did you get to him?
I was 17 when he died.
Oh, okay. But he was in ill
health.
He was
in the hospital.
For many of those
years.
Yeah,
he was in the hospital since I was about 1.5 or 2, actually 4. But he used to come home on the weekends. We'd bring him home and have hootenannies and musicians and a lot of people around. But I remember one of my mom's typical stories about him. She said he would go out in the morning to buy a pack of cigarettes and come home 2 weeks later. And I mean, now we're sitting here laughing.
I know, but it wouldn't have been funny at the time.
But as we describe it, you're really describing the flow of an artist in a way. My mother could be at peace with that. Now, Woody's first wife, Mary, wasn't at peace with that. And it's not the kind of thing that rubs everyone the right way. My mother happened to be a dancer who worked with Martha Graham, and she had a lot of contact with very eccentric artists. I mean, she understood, and she would explain to us, his work is out there in the streets, and that's where he goes. And he would go to pick up a pack of cigarettes, and he'd run into someone in the store, and they'd say, hey, Woody, there's a rally on 14th Street. Come on down. He'd say, okay. And then from there, he'd meet someone. Oh, there's a thing happening in Philadelphia. You want to come? Hitch a ride? Sure, yeah. So he followed his muse, and his muse was the road and people. He loved the talking to people and hearing people's stories. And that's, I think, it's like a, you have a love-hate thing. Is that a good quality or a bad quality? Could he have written This Land Is Your Land without it? I don't think so.
This land is your land, and this land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you and me. As I went a-walking that ribbon of highway, and I saw above me that endless skyway, I saw below me that golden valley. This land was made for you and me.
Nora Guthrie runs the Woody Guthrie Archives. Elizabeth Partridge's biography of Woody Guthrie is called This Land Was Made for You and Me. They talked with Steve Paulson.